B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
4 o'clock hour. Rich Hoffman is going to join us at 4:30. We'll talk some Sixers issues, NBA basketball, if it ever gets back, which I don't think it will, but we shall see. 4 o'clock hour brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise, one line at landisbc.com. So in the 3 o'clock hour, I went for the most underrated rock bands of all time. So who would be your list of hip-hop artists, underrated hip-hop artists, Tyrone?
Underrated hip-hop artist. All right, that's tough. Lupe Fiasco's underrated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think he was underrated for a long time. Ghostface, underrated.
Uh-huh.
Underrated, for sure. He's probably the most underrated. I'm trying to go from region to region, Jadakiss, underrated.
Okay.
Jadakiss, way underrated. Doesn't get enough love. Down south, is there anybody? South takes care of each other. That'd be the top three.
The top three? Yeah. How about if I throw Tech N9ne at you?
See, Tech N9ne doesn't want his music to go to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not underrated. He's rated properly amongst those who are aware of him.
Okay.
Because he stayed independent and he has a cult following and everybody likes him. He never wanted his music to go out to enough people to be rated. So he's different. I guess he's underrated in that he's great and mm-hmm. people don't give him credit, but he doesn't want everyone to hear his music.
Okay. Big Pun.
Big Pun, ooh. Not under. Here's why I don't think he's underrated.
Right.
I'm a hard grader. One great album, one unfortunately album that comes out after his death in which he was over 700 pounds
mm-hmm.
and was laying like in a bed in the studio. The vocals are not the same. Mm. You can't be underrated with one great album, in my opinion.
All right. The D.O.C.
D.O.C. had, not underrated.
No?
Not underrated. Not enough of a body of work. Also, his speech pattern changed. I forget why.
Tragedy Gaddafi.
Don't know him.
Cool Keith.
Cool Keith can be Cool Keith can be underrated, but Cool Keith also Cool Keith also is like a character.
These names are just great.
He changes his like personas and stuff like that. Like sometimes I wonder if it's more like play, than music. Okay. So no,
all right. Mac Dre.
I don't really know Mac Dre.
No, Large Professor.
All right,
not Big Pun, but no. Large Professor.
Large Professor.
No go?
No. The tough part about Large Professor is people love. Yeah, that was. He had a DUI and crushed his larynx. That's what happened. Oh, he pointed out with the DLC.
Okay.
So, one great album. Large Professor, Nas, Jay-Z, a lot of people looked up to him. I still don't think he's underrated.
All right. Malice.
Yeah, Malice might have been underrated.
All right. Nature.
Nature might have been a little. A little under.
All right, finally, Max B.
Max B gets.
How are you not feeling a lot of these?
Max B gets a lot of dude.
All right,
Max B gets his dude.
Okay.
The tough part with hip hop is a body of work. That's the one thing I hold against Biggie, for example.
Uh-huh.
Body of work. I usually say you need to do it three times before I consider you great. That's in any genre,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the artists you name have not necessarily, due to numerous reasons, did it three times.
Okay.
Ghostface has done it a lot of times and doesn't get the credit he deserves. To me, he's top five dead or alive. Most people don't say he's top five dead or alive.
Okay. Now let's go Tom Northeast. Tom, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tom.
Hi, Mike. Always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Tom.
Yeah. I have an Eagles point, which please don't forget to let me get to it, about the virus. Where I live, we don't have sidewalks, and there's really nobody out there, so I can go walking every day for my wife and I. We've been married for 45 years, so we can just walk outside, and if we see three or four people, it seems like it's a lot. And we went to walk right in the middle of the road, no problem, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's soft. The roads are actually, macadam is much softer than concrete, so it's even better for your feet.
Right.
on this music stuff, you're killing me.
Oh, let me ask you a question. When you're passing people in the street, like, if you do...
We always, like, move to one side of the
you
road.
Go, so you don't stop and chat?
No.
You don't have stop and chats
anymore.
We
chat from across the street, because a lot of times, this is a neighborhood where people do know each other a lot.
Okay, so in neighborhoods that people know each other, I don't have sidewalks either, right? But I see a lot of people that, and I don't know anybody, because I pretty much stay myself, but
okay,
I do see the stop and chat every now and then when I'm walking the dog.
Yeah, but we do the stop and chat, but we do my wife is a chemist, so she doesn't call it social distancing.
Uh-huh.
She says physical distancing.
Yeah.
You got to maintain the physical 6 to 10 feet. So we do that. And another thing, I know you were talking about before about boredom being the enemy. I'll tell you one thing. I have never been bored in a minute in my life, and I've lived a lot of years. I'm still not bored. And I'm putting sports away as much as I love it. I'm putting it away for the time.
Let me ask you, Tom, are you retired?
Yes,
right,
I'm retired.
You're retired. All right, so you have kind of a familiarity.
I'm a retired lawyer.
Oh, well, there you go. So you have a familiarity with being retired and living your life, you know, kind of like this, right?
Now I do.
No?
Yeah, but I mean, and not having the deadlines, as you know, that he's always had.
Right.
It's sort of nice. But I've never been, I'm doing things that I wished I could do before, but I didn't have time. I'm reading much more. I'm conversing a lot more. The biggest problem is we have 4 children in the area and the grandchildren, and we really can't be physically near them.
That's the hardship that I'm hearing from a lot of people. I can't see their grandchildren.
That's tough. I miss my dad. Can't go see him because he's high risk. So we're all trying to, like, band together to make sure he's good. But as far as physically going to the house, because I'm leaving the house each day, and I think this is a safe environment, but I am still going physically to a building every day, I feel like it would be irresponsible for me to go sit in his house. You know what I mean? So it's a tough thing.
How's your dad doing?
He's holding up pretty good.
Yeah,
he's been good. At first, he wasn't getting why we weren't visiting, which I can understand.
He's alone now. Mom just passed, so it's like a new aloneness for him. So what is he doing on a daily basis to amuse himself or to stay not bored?
Well, he's discovered some movies. Like, he's watching some movies. He texts us about us. And then we got a group text going, and he's checking in. But we're trying to keep him, unfortunately, from doing too much, telling him not to do stuff, even though he wants to do stuff, saying, nah, because the health conditions and your age, you got it. We want you to stay in. And he hates it, though. Like, he's not wired. He's hardwired to be doing stuff. So he...
Well, he's got a double whammy, because I was talking to him at your party, and he was really upset that your sister was moving to Georgia.
Yeah, she's down in Georgia now, too.
So maybe it's a little more tolerable because he can't see anybody and, you know, maybe misses his baby girl.
Yes, if my sister was still around, I would imagine he'd be throwing a fit.
Yeah.
He won't throw a fit for his sons, but he would throw his way.
That's a sign of weakness.
That's what I'm saying. It's just his way.
Uh-huh.
He would throw a fit absolutely for his, and she's the youngest.
That's the way it goes.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's go Gene in Doylestown. Gene, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Gene.
Good afternoon, Michael.
What's
How
up,
are
Gene?
You today?
How you doing?
You know, just dealing with it. But as far as sports go, I can't see them even spreading it out anymore. Like, I don't know why they don't just come out and say we're done for the year and just, you know.
Well, there's no reason to say that either, that we're done for the year. You know, I'm not asking for that. I'm just like, this false hope that we're going to have a full football season. I don't think that benefits anybody. But I also don't think that they should say we're done for the season. Like, well, you know, we got the Mike Miss Open here, you know? We have that in June this year. Now, but there's no chance we're going to do it. But we're not ready to announce that it's over.
What about FanFest?
Well, that's another thing that's at risk. You know, we're talking about August now.
Yeah.
So it might be a year where we don't do any of those social activities. But we got, you know, there's nothing. It's like out of our control. And for some reason, people are going to try to come in here and try to control for some reason to, like, what? False hope? False hope doesn't give anybody any satisfaction. It only makes it worse when the moment arrives that you can't do it.
Right. That's kind of why I'm saying I almost wish they would just come out and say we're not doing it and just remove all that false hope. Don't mm-hmm. dangle it out there anymore. You know what I mean? Just or at least say we're done until this date. We're not even looking at it again.
Well, all I have to say is we're not even looking at it. Like they don't even have to put the first part in. Like it's too, you know, we have no idea, just like you, we don't have any idea what's going on.
And there's no point in revisiting it because, like you just said, nobody knows mm-hmm. what's going on.
Exactly.
But we couldn't possibly know. During this, have you by any chance had the opportunity to watch the show Brockmire? Have you seen
I
that
hate
yet?
That show. I hate it. I had this argument with Jason Stark. There's nothing funny about that show. What do you like about that show?
I find it funny, and I thought it was kind of on point how this year's season specifically is dealing with what they're terming the death of baseball. And you know, they're in the future, not far, like 25, 26, but baseball is an afterthought to society. And it's kind of funny to me to watch, but it's one of them things where you either love it or you hate it.
I can't believe that show got renewed. I got to be honest with you, Gene. I find nothing funny in that show. Well, I think baseball guys love it. Oh, you like Brockmire? All these guys that cover baseball. Brockmire. It's stupid.
I've never seen it.
It's the second stupidest show I've seen since Eastbound and Down.
Brockmire. What is that?
He's an old broadcaster who lost his job because he was a drunk. And he's like, he was, in the first season, he was a broadcaster for some independent team, trying to get back to the big time. And somehow, this season, he becomes a commissioner of baseball. It's like Hank Azaria with a bad accent.
Oh, okay.
That's who Brockmire is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now that you mention it, I kind of have heard of it. I've never seen it.
And Jason Stark thought it was hysterical. I go, what? Come on, Jay.
I wonder if it's baseball related.
Anything that's connected to baseball writers think it's the greatest.
Speaking of broadcasters and drinking, if there's one documentary just ripe to be told, it's all the broadcasters that have done games drunk, going back and getting the stories or getting, you have to get it secondhand. Mm-hmm. Some of them have passed away. Because I hear the rumors about Harry Carey out in Chicago, how they said he had a sock. And like a plastic bag inside the sock, it would drink out the sock.
During the game. It doesn't surprise me at all.
I don't know if any of these are true. So I want to hear this. I think that could be a whole, it could at least be 90 minutes stories.
Those guys that did it for years, like the old guy, like from age 25 to 80.
Yeah.
And all those years of baseball and all the bad teams you've had to see over the years.
Yeah.
I can imagine those guys take a little nip.
Like summer.
Now Harry, after a game, love to hang at a couple hours afterwards and have a couple pops.
I've heard that as well.
In the Phillies lunchroom there after the game. Wind down, talk about the game, a little pop.
I've heard that.
Yeah, he was a clear liquid drinker, I think.
And I also heard that Pat Summerall called the Masters one time, woke up the next morning and called and asked somebody who won because he didn't remember it, yet his call was crystal clear. Like these stories.
There's old guy like Harry Carey with the slur word. They would slur anyway. You couldn't really tell.
So it didn't matter.
Jack Brickhouse.
I heard these guys, all these guys were half in the bag doing the games year round.
Oh, it was the guy who did the Detroit Tigers. Old school guy, Detroit Tiger guy.
I know you're talking about, I don't know his name.
He was like a legendary guy, too.
These guys, like, was it true? Like, just give me 30 minutes on some of the stories.
Yeah, those guys, man, that's a lifestyle all its own.
Red Barber.
No, he was a Yankee guy.
Was he?
Yeah, Red Barber was the Yankees. The Detroit guy was, I'm going to find this. Ernie Harwell. That's who Ernie Harwell was. He's been.
I think
guy.
He was included in that. They were talking about guys.
He did 55 years.
Yeah.
Called baseball games in 55 years. On a crap teams that he's seen. What are the Tigers? I guess they had a couple World Series winning teams.
So,
but most of the time, they stink.
So then they resort because you got to get through all these.
Oh, my God.
Season.
I got to watch these mutts again.
All 162.
Give me a flask. Greg in Bethlehem. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Greg.
Hey guys, how we doing?
What's up, Greg?
Well, I heard you talking earlier about you know, the sports that we loved as when we were younger. And baseball was always my thing, and I was curious. I have one particular play that I was involved with that I'll remember forever, and I thought, you know, you might have something similar. But you know, I was on a team that was playing for the championship and was on third base, one out, tied score, and I looked over to the third base coach, and he clenches both fists and then swipes his chest, which was our sign for a suicide squeeze. And I stared at him because we never hadn't run a suicide squeeze all year. And I'm thinking, holy.
You were the batter?
I was on third.
What level was this?
Well, I was 16 at the time.
All right, so it was like it was a high school or Babe Ruth or summer or like what was it?
Yeah, high school.
Okay.
And you know, we had a decent team, but anyway, you know, we didn't have an acknowledgement sign. So I'm staring at the batter and I'm not sure if he got the sign or not, but I didn't want to call time out and talk to the coach. They'd know something was up. So, you know, I take my lead and the pitcher goes into the windup and I streak for home. And, you know, the batter hasn't squared around yet and the ball's coming in and he rears back and he starts swinging.
He didn't get the sign.
So I hit the dirt, slide into the batter across the plate. He misses the ball. He misses me and the catcher drops the ball and we win the game.
Well, there you go. It worked out in the end. Well, obviously that guy didn't get the sign. Now, normally in a situation with a suicide squeeze, there is an acknowledgement by the batter that he got the sign.
So yeah, some
people will touch their ear or the cap or something like that.
Right, your right. Sign is. Now, do you have any memorable event like that?
Where a guy I have a lot of memorable events. But I can't remember one specific one that like stands out like that. I know nobody ever swung when I was coming down the line on a suicide squeeze.
Right.
I used to bust up a lot of double plays. I was like one of those guys.
Slide hard.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I hated the opposition. That's why when I look at guys now, or how they talk to each other all the time.
Yeah, you don't like that.
No,
you don't like any of that.
No, I think you gotta hate to play it. On your total edge, you gotta hate the guy that you play against.
Really.
That's
funny.
That's the way I always thought. That's how I raised my competitive level, by like they were the enemy.
You know, in hindsight, I'd like to apologize to anybody who knew me, who's listening or watching when I was younger, about all the trash talk and some of the horrid things I used to say to people on the basketball court. It was bad. I would like to apologize. In real time, it all made sense.
You insulted him personally?
I would say whatever it took to get into a guy's head. So if it took something very small, I would only say small things. If it took more, I'd do more. And if it took more than more, if it took the guy needing to want to fight me, I was going to go wherever it went.
Did you call him a BA?
Worse than that. But yeah, talk about their moms, all kinds of stuff. Their sisters, it didn't matter. Baby mamas, it didn't matter. I was going wherever I needed to get the guy more worried about me than the game. Whatever it took. And it led to some physical altercation. I had my brother tell some of the stories before.
You had a bad head.
I was getting bigger. Listen, yeah, but.
You had a bad head.
But I always felt good in that space. So they were on 10. They think I'm on 10, but I'm at 2 because I was more comfortable in that space than the peaceful state. So,
see, I was playing baseball in an era where bench jockeying was prevalent. Like they don't do that anymore. They have too much respect. But we used to rag the pitcher all the time if he couldn't throw a strike, and you know, and just you know, we would.
Well, that's would a nice.
Like My baseball coach at Penn State was ragging the Temple coach during the game.
During the game?
During the game. They're going at each other during the game, like, because they were two old school dudes and they hated each other.
Yeah.
So they were yapping at each other the whole game. So you're free to do that too.
Baseball's a nasty game back then. Spiking guys. You heard Willie Mays was a Mr. Smiles. He knocked a man unconscious. Probably didn't even care.
No, you just, you know, you played the game hard.
You throw a guy throws a ball from second to first on a double play. If it hits the guy in the face, you say, oh, he should have got down when he slipped.
Exactly. Well, I was specifically taught to hit a guy in the forehead.
Yeah, see? Now that could kill a guy.
Well,
I'm saying, don't think about that. Well, you hit really, a hard
on,
ball.
On a replay, I mean, on a double play, if I'm making a pivot and a guy comes in high, you throw right at his head.
See? Like, I get it, but like...
Okay, don't get down to next time.
But that's...
Nobody ever
might
stood.
Not be a next time.
Now, I always didn't want... I wanted to get the out, so I never did... I would never do that. I try to throw it over his head, but I would say, wouldn't. next time get down, I would say. Because I wanted to get the out, so I still wanted to complete a double play. I wasn't going to throw and hit him.
And some of these guys...
No, you always want to get the out if you're a player, but it's like they're putting that mindset in you. Like that edge mindset.
Of all the sports, maybe baseball's the nastiest.
It probably is because it polices itself. So you got to be nasty. All right, let's go. Tommy in Quakertown. Tommy, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tommy.
Hi, Mike. How are
What's
you?
What's up, Tommy?
I got a question for you. I wanted to rattle your brain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I want you and Ty's opinion on this. I know we're talking sports. We're not, nothing's going on. But here's my thing. Memorial Day's in 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I always play horseshoes. I got an idea.
Yeah.
You play one guy. He's on the other side. You're on the other side. You're 40 feet away. You only play with two shoes. You throw the other two at. You're still playing competitively, even though it's not against the other guy that you should be playing against. But it's still to win the game. Maybe wear a pair of gloves. And
where are you playing? Game? Where are you playing these horseshoes, Tommy?
Backyard.
Backyard. So you are going to invite somebody over to play horseshoes?
Yes. But you're 40 feet away. I never did it before, but it's a. I kind of understand how to play it. You stay on one side.
Yeah, I played a lot of horseshoes in my life. I'm a big fan.
I love.
But like you're inviting a stranger though. The stranger
a friend,
Well, but you don't know where the friend's been. Like if it's a family member living in your house, then that'd be different. But you got a neighbor, you don't know where the neighbor's been.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know, he's crossing your path. Now, unless you avoid each other, like, completely, and he comes into your backyard and he opens the fence and he stays right there, and then you have already put the peg in and he doesn't move from that spot, and then you come out the back door and you stay in your spot, and maybe you can pull that off.
Yeah. And then with the gloves. And then I did it before. It's different, but you know what? It's something to do. I thought maybe 40 feet away would be okay. You know what I mean? With the gloves, you know?
Yeah.
You throw them 40, out after you play them and watch them or throw them out.
Yeah, that's not regulation, 40 feet.
Yeah, 40 feet.
Is that regulation?
Yeah.
It is?
Horseshoes are,
okay,
40
I thought
feet.
It was, all right.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing, I'm older now and I had back surgery. I don't have to walk the 40 feet. Back to the other team, and you only play with two guys.
There you go.
Play the teams. But I wanted Ty's opinion on that. And another thing I wanted to ask you, if it's okay, I think you grew up around Bristol area, you said?
I did. Down the line years ago in Bristol? I did. Tyrone's
from
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, you did. Well, this is what I want to ask you. Mm-hmm. It's been 40 years, because I don't live down that way. I used to live in Ben Salem years and years ago. But is Georgine still there, the restaurant?
Yes, it is.
I thought
that's considered
you probably went there a lot in your life. Yeah, but it's a great
I went there a couple times because the old man loved the portions. It was for older Italian people. It's like the portions. If a place serves a good portion, then he would take you there as the family.
Georgine's for like everything.
Yeah,
every
that's like semi northeast. It's like Croydon.
Yeah,
it's called Croydon.
You were traveling to go to Georgine's.
Yeah, all the funeral, post-funeral.
Everything. Grub. Everything was at Georgine's.
Exactly.
wait a minute. I was there recently.
You probably.
Like last time, I thought I texted you while I was there.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
You did. Somebody knew me there.
Yeah, somebody there did know you. At the bar downstairs.
Right, it was a bartender.
I was doing an anniversary party upstairs. And I came downstairs because it was during
the
Eagles Saints game, the blowout.
Yeah,
that's when I was. So it's not, but like somewhat recently.
Yeah, they like my father. You couldn't get over there and veal cutlet. They had a veal cutlet would like fill the whole plate. You know, you can never eat the whole thing, but it was he was getting his money's worth.
Well, and you knew it was going to be decent food. Yeah, you knew it was going to be good.
Yeah. It was decent.
It was either Georgine's or Kelly's Seafood. There was no in between.
Yeah. But by the way, I played horseshoes at the last party I had in my backyard. It was a horseshoe game going on.
Yeah, I
had the horseshoes out.
You did have the horseshoes out. I was playing.
I had a little ping pong table set up. I had a horseshoe station.
You had a nice thing. I had a good thing going with the horseshoes. I was playing with Martinez's wife.
Oh, that's right. Martinez's wife was your partner?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. She was good.
Well. She was good. We did all right.
Yeah, she's an outdoors horseshoe thrower.
Yeah, very comfortable out there. Yeah.
Yeah, she's rural.
Mm-hmm. Tougher than him in that way.
All right, 610-632-0975. Couple of lines. Good time to get in. Whatever you want to talk about, let's talk about it. Mike Missinelli Show back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
4:31. Let's get a Twitter poll update brought to us by Paul B. Moore and Sons with Natalie Agonoff. Nat.
Thanks, Mike. Over 1,900 votes on this one today. Do you care about sports at all right now? 63% say yes, 37% say no.
All right. I haven't heard the dog in a while. Did you banish her?
Okay, no. So what had happened was, when the show was starting, for some reason, once the show starts, she decides she wants to bark. So I threw her up in my bedroom, mm-hmm. and that's where she was barking from. So I was waiting for a break to let her out. I don't know what to do with her when she starts to act up.
Well, so now what is she doing right now?
She's sleeping on the edge of the couch. I let her out, and now she's behaving, and she's sleeping.
Well, there you go. She just wants to be included.
Yeah, but she wants to bully me and boss me around while I'm trying to do my job here.
Well, I'm sure that she's figured out that she can.
That is correct. I have not figured out a way to curb that behavior.
Yeah,
she's not a young dog.
The dogs are smart.
They're not going to figure it out.
Figure out their owner's weaknesses.
No, and I mean, she is. She's old. She's 13, so I can't break her now. And now I'm home with her all the time. It's been interesting.
Oh. Well, hang in there, Nat. Yeah, give her a little treat. All right, let's talk some Sixers. Sixers have been so far out of our minds that we have to be pulled back into it. And our man Rich Hoffman pulled us back into it today, writing for The Athletic with a great story. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Hello, Rich. How you making out?
I'm okay, Mike. Taking it day by day, I'm sure, like everybody else.
Yes. Now, I love these introspective pieces because these are nice thoughts. You know, all we can do is sit home and think. You wrote a great piece of the 10 things I learned from the Sixers' possibly completed season. Now, what I learned is that they're not good enough to win the East. But what did you learn? Let's go over it little by little here. First of all, let's talk about their offense as opposed to their defense. We were conditioned to think that they had built up this defensive juggernaut and that was going to win some games. So how did it work out when you analyzed it?
Yeah, I didn't think they were as good as I thought they would be. I think, you know, I was probably on your show in October or so, and I looked at the personnel, and I don't think I was unique in this regard. I thought they were going to be the best defense in the league, and they just weren't really even that close. And, you know, I think some of that is they weren't able to get all of their guys healthy for a little bit. That only goes so far. I think some of it was, I don't want to say like a complete lack of effort, but they weren't completely focused in. I was pretty disappointed in how they defended without Joel Embiid on the court. They weren't very good when that happened. And I think, you know, it goes at the end of the year, or maybe the season's over, they're like a pretty good defense, but I thought they had a chance to be great, and they were not at that level.
All right, so what else did you learn here as we look back at this team, sixth seed right now, and who knows what would happen or what could happen, but right now, what have you learned? It seems to be such an incomplete page here.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of what I learned is that, you know, so they built so much of this team for the playoffs, and we don't know if that's going to happen. So I thought that's why today I thought it would be good to kind of judge what we saw. There were a bunch of things I learned. I think, you know, if you just want to talk from like a personnel standpoint, The one thing I would say is that Al Horford playing next to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, probably not going to work moving forward. I think we saw enough of that. It didn't look good. The numbers offensively were stark. Like, just take him out of the lineup, Embiid and Simmons are fine. Put him back in. It just doesn't work. And I think that's the main thing. But I think, like, an overall take I would have, Mike, and I think maybe it's something you noticed as well. I just couldn't believe the amount of attention this team got, both locally and nationally. And I wonder if that level of scrutiny, like after every game they played well, is Ben Simmons better without Joel Embiid? You know, just all of these different storylines. And I wondered if, you know, maybe it just got to them a little bit. They can say they want to block out all the headlines, all the news, but I kind of felt like maybe the pressure got to them a little bit. Just because of all the attention they got this.
Well, does your data reveal that they were better off that way?
With what? With Horford?
No, with Ben Simmons better without Joel Embiid?
Ben Simmons, like, statistically is a little bit better without Joel Embiid, but the Sixers are not much better without him. I think for both of those guys, I think that's the main point. Like, I think we would have seen it in the coming weeks if the NBA didn't get shut down. When both of those guys, when one of them goes down, the other guy is capable of carrying the team, and their, you know, their individual stats will increase. But I think over time, what we've seen over the past couple of years, the team is not better.
When you left covering this team on an everyday basis, did you get the impression that they felt the Horford thing was a colossal disappointment? Did you get that vibe from the front office or the coaching staff?
Well, I think you can just look at what they did right before the All-Star break.
By taking him out of the lineup.
Horford.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they put him. And I think, like, look, they study these numbers even closer than I do. That was not an easy decision for them to make. Al Horford, I forget what the stat was. I don't think he had come off the bench since, like, his rookie year, like 2008 or something like that. And, you know, the Doc in your pride, the hit that had to be for him, I don't think that was an easy decision for them to make. But they just looked at this and thought, oh man, this is not working, and it's clear he's kind of the consistent factor between everybody. So yeah, I do think they were probably a little bit disappointed with how he functioned with those two guys on the court. Now, a big part of it obviously was that he was going to hold down the fort when Embiid sat, like, especially in the playoffs. But yeah, I think there was a disappointment in how he functioned with the rest of the starters.
All right, let's say a couple last things here. And you listen to what people say all the time, and it's usually triggered by a missed three-pointer by Joel Embiid. But that carries on to a bigger topic, which is, oh my God, that's all he does is shoot threes, and he doesn't post up. But the fact of the matter is, the numbers would say opposite, right?
Yeah, he is the best post-up player in the league by a mile, and that's not just because, like, he's efficient doing it. He posts up more than anybody in the league by a ton. He led the league in post-up possessions this year, despite the fact he only played 44 of, like, 65 games. He is really good at that. And I think part of the reason why he shoots threes, there's a couple of reasons. And I agree, like, if you just, like, look at his percentages, they're not great. They bumped up a little bit this year. But there is value in spacing the floor. I mean, like, look, it's a lot of teams want to play five out now. And with Ben Simmons, who likes to be around the basket, he has to make that sacrifice and space the floor sometimes. And the other thing I would say is that posting up really hurts. Like, big guys are allowed to beat the heck out of you in a way that you're not allowed to put your hands on Steph Curry. It's just different. And I think the wear and tear of posting up can get to a guy. So I do think you want to mix it up a little bit. Like, perhaps in the playoffs moving forward, you would want him posting up a lot more. That's when it really matters.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, the numbers say that he posts up more than anybody, and despite the fact he posts up more than anybody, he's about as efficient as anybody too.
So all right,
he's really good at it.
Let me play this little game with you before we let you go. It's called Real or Fake. Or it could be yeah or eh. So let me go throw Cork Moss at you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Shake Milton.
I'm leaning towards real. I would go if it's between and real. I was really impressed with how that guy played over the past couple of weeks. And to me, I thought what he was doing, the most impressive part was that it looked like he would be able to fill a role once Ben Simmons came back. Like, it wasn't just that he scored 39 points against the Clippers. Mm-hmm. It was that he wasn't forcing things. And I thought his feel for how to play was really good. I would lean, you know, a little higher. He probably was hurt by this break more than anybody because he was playing.
Yeah, Tyron's playing his shake theme. That's his man. And finally, Thibel.
I would say, is real. I don't know, like, what exact role that is going to be. I know that they view him as a future starter. His offense, like, sneakily, like, is not very advanced right now. Like, all he can do is basically hit a catch and shoot three. But I saw enough on the defensive end that the stuff he does is really unique just in terms of forcing steals and like, reading the game. He's going to be a part of their future, at least for the next few years. And I think that was one of my takeaways, too, with those three guys that you mentioned. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if they would have been able to sink or swim in a playoff series this year. I'm not sure. But, like, compared to last year when, like, Scott and James Ennis were your two best bench players, the fact that you have those guys who are under contract for cheap for the next few years and with their best basketball ahead of them, I think that is, like, one thing that the Sixers can feel decent about what they've done.
All right, that's fair. And so if this league does resume in whatever form and they manage to get some kind of a playoffs system in there, do you believe that it would take a miracle for the Sixers to win this conference, or is it realistic? Could they get on a roll?
I think it's more realistic than people think. I mean, Ben's injury is probably the biggest variable here, and look, this time is going to help him, I would imagine. You know, I was talking to doctors before this happened, and they basically were like, you know, probably like the middle of the playoffs from what little they had told us is when he would come back. So, you know, with the lack of information we're dealing with, you would think that he'd be able to rest a little bit longer. I always thought this team was going to be a better playoff team, no matter how frustrating they got, no matter how many times they lost four games in a row on the road during the regular season. I just thought in the playoffs when their main guys were locked in and ready to go, I thought they would be better. But, you know, it depends on what the playoff format would be like. I don't really see this bubble quarantine idea really happening. To me, it just seems like logistically that's going to be really hard.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. which means if it ends now in this form, the coach is not likely to be back.
I don't know, Mike.
You got some hope for the coach?
Well, I just thought this whole time he was going to be judged on the playoffs. And, you know, we always talked, like, I didn't think they were going to get out of the East, but, you know, there was a chance, and they were kind of banking on having that chance. If you don't have a chance to play the playoffs, what are we judging them on? And I don't, like, think it would be crazy if he was let go in such a scenario. I'm just saying, like, I would not guarantee that.
Okay. Well,
because it's just so crazy. That I don't know.
We'll see what happens. Rich, keep going, man. We appreciate it. And hang in there.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, there he is. Rich Hoffman from The Athletic. He raised a point. I mean, if this team is built for the playoffs and you give them a chance to coach it in the playoffs, how could you really know? I don't subscribe to that.
Second writer you've had on in 2 weeks, though, who have said that. Pompey said it last week.
Yeah.
Again, he didn't say it'd be wrong to fire him, but he's those guys are there all the time.
I just think it would.
I hear you.
It's just ignoring your fan base if you do it.
The people will be mad.
610-632-0975. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
4:50, Mike Mussinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. In the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to look at Todd McShay's mock draft for whatever that's worth. I don't know what mock drafts are worth anymore because everybody's got one. And so, McShay, you have to pay for these, right, on the ESPN website?
Yeah.
You got to pay for McShay and Kiper?
Yep.
What's the status on, like, how much do you have? Because it used to be if you subscribe to the magazine, but don't have the magazine anymore, right?
No.
Okay, so what's the fee?
Well, they have a thing where you can get that, Disney Plus, and something else all together in a bundle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just pay for the bundle. But I had that, and then I rolled it in. I think it was like $5 a month, something like that.
All right, so he still has Joe Burrow going number one, which is, and he's got Chase Young going two. So they're you know, that's not going to change, probably.
No.
So he's got the Lions with Aduka, the cornerback in Ohio State. Giants, Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker from Clemson. Dolphins going with Tua.
Yeah. And that's which, about
these are no surprises, right?
No, and his medicals keep coming back good, although no one can double check the medicals.
Chargers reaching. They're doing a Mitchell Trubisky reach with Jordan Love, the quarterback from Utah State.
Now they'll say he's going to sit like Mahomes did, and he'll be Mahomes. That's what their counter would be. We're not reaching. We're just getting him a year early, and then he'll be Mahomes.
Derrick Brown, Carolina Panthers from Auburn, defensive tackle.
He's a good player.
Wirfs, Tristan Wirfs, the offensive tackle. That's a solid pick by Arizona. They need to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
Jacksonville, Justin Herbert. Draft a quarterback. I guess they got to groom the quarterback behind mustache.
But, see, that's what I don't understand. I would watch that. That screams trade. That pick.
All right, and the Browns fell to the top 10 with Jedrick Willis, the offensive tackle from Alabama, which means that no wide receivers have been taken in the first 10 so far. So the drama builds for the 5 o'clock hour as we go to Jay in North Philly. Jay, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jay.
Hey, what's happening?
So, what's up, Jay?
Hey, I know this is a distant conversation, but y'all were talking about underrated bands, underrated musicians, and I had a three-pronged approach to this. First off, you were talking about Duran Duran.
Yeah.
And I was a kid. I was born in 79. I was a kid when Duran Duran was killing the world. And I'm not big on their catalog, but they rock. Like,
they're a very underrated band. John Taylor is a tremendous musician. He's in the band. And if you listen to all their work, you'll realize that they're just not a foo-foo, sign of the time alt band.
No, not about it. Because listen, and again, it's not my genre, it's not my catalog, but and it's from my childhood, so maybe that makes me biased. But every time I heard Duran Duran songs, they reached me. They did something to me.
There you go. And there you go, Ty. Duran Duran, baby.
That's right, Ty. Listen to your boy, Ty. Listen to your boy. You know what I'm saying? Duran was a no joke. You know what I mean? It was no joke.
Right, no joke.
And let me get to part two of number three.
Go ahead.
Part two of number three is Roxy Music.
Yes.
Okay.
Brian Ferry.
And again. Yes, and again. Uh-huh. I didn't come to this, you know, as somebody that listened to it growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I came to this from other media leading me to it. That song, More Than This, once I heard it, I realized it was in literally like five or six different, you know, pieces of media, like new movies and TV shows. That song's everywhere. And I know you didn't see Mindhunter because I listened to the show, but if you watch the second season of Mindhunter...
I'm on the first season now. It's good. I tell you what, it starts off pretty slow.
It does.
I'm fighting through this. I really am.
Well, you need to. You need to because you ain't got nothing but time, bro.
Yeah, I got you, Jay. I'm really fighting. This is about as boring a start of a series as I've ever seen, Mindhunters.
Yeah, I mean,
they threw in a sex part early to keep you interested.
And that's all you get.
Yeah, you know, he's like a straight-laced FBI guy in his 20s. He meets a girl at a bar. All of a sudden, they're in bed. And it's like, okay, I get it, because there's nothing else going on.
People do say it's good, but that's going to be a no for
you. You got the furrowed brow for Roxy Music, man, Brian Ferry. And 5 o'clock hour, you got to find your way into Love is the Drug. Love is the Drug.
All right.
Brian Ferry and Roxy Music.
All right. No problem. I got you.
All right, let's take a break. Duran Duran, Roxy Music, underrated. 5 o'clock hours ahead on Mike Misnelli Show, back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.